So here we are, first week done at Wimbledon, and what an amazing 6 days we have had of competition. But now it's time to put the feet up just for a few hours at least. And I'm sat back at home in the countryside looking out at the fields behind my house. Baza, where are you?
Well, lucky you. I'm also in the countryside, but just been out mowing the grass. There's no let up. But actually, it is nice because when we're covering events, you live in your own bubble, don't you?
Yes.
You go from one match to the other, one story to the other. And you actually forget what's happening out in the real world. So it's just nice to recharge the batteries, and can't wait for the last 16. I mean, it is, well, it's Manic Monday, Magic Monday. The best day of the year for me in tennis, because you've got so many great matches and so many great stories that could develop even further.
Absolutely, they could. But what are the stories that you've really been excited by in week one?
Well, obviously we've got to start with Corey Gauff, and I know you've commentated on a few times already, Barry, but just the magic story of how he got the wild card into qualifying, breezed through qualies, and then just lit up the first week with her tennis. I think the age obviously is one of the attractions to, I would say, non-tennis fans, which we'll come on to a few of the other stories about the non-tennis fans that sort of grab you. And then her desire and her guts. And you did a great job commentating on Coco's match, but it was something else, wasn't it? Because it wasn't going her way against Herzog, but then she just showed fight and that will to win.
It was outstanding, wasn't it? I was working with Jill Krabus, and obviously having her expertise alongside me to point us in the right direction and really assess what was going on out there. And I loved the fact, Baz, doing this match on the Friday, that, as you say, it looked like it was going away because Herzog was dominating her with a huge forehand. And yet we've talked plenty in the podcast over the last few months about coaching, on-court coaching. And what I absolutely loved, and what was a shining example of the need for doing it on your own, because it is one-on-one in singles tennis, obviously, is the fact that the player can work it out. And she's only 15, and yet she worked out mid-match on the biggest stage imaginable in the game how to change it up and change things tactically and start to play more, much more into the backhand wing of her opponent and be patient and then choose the right moment to come in and attack. And that's what turned it around. It was incredible.
Yeah, and that for me is why I think the sport will be better for it, with making your own decisions, because ultimately I think you're a better player when you do make your own decisions. And she will grow in confidence to be able to, when you win a match like that, you almost take more confidence when you're able to turn around from what was a losing position into be able to get a big win, as opposed to those days that were very few and far between when you just everything works from ball one.
She's stood out since she was a girl. I mean, what a 10 years age of age, and then working at the Mouratoglou Academy. And you look at the player's box and you compare the two on Friday night, and her box was absolutely full. Her mum and dad there, and the coach, and the rest of the entourage. And you look on the other side, and it's simply Zeljko Krajan, who is coach to Herzog. So a very different kind of a approach from there. But in terms of the people around her, it is so important. Even though she is so young, I get the feeling that in her case, it is already being managed well, and it will need to continue to be managed well in the next few years, because now she's a global star already at 15, and how she's able to handle all the pressure, all the extra interest, is going to be a real test.
And that's why I like the age eligibility rule. 10 tournaments at her age, it's 10 tournaments plus the four Grand Slams if she gets in the main draw of the four Slams. So it's a maximum of 14 tournaments plus potentially Fed Cup. Because what's the rush? I mean, it was amazing that on Friday morning she was actually the fourth favourite to win the championships, which was utterly ridiculous.
Wow.
I mean, it's crazy. And, there is always the danger that you lose perspective
Yes.
of where she's at. Yes, it's a wonderful story, but she is only 15 and she's a special talent. And the kid is going to go, I believe, to the very top if everyone keeps their feet on the ground. But she's a long way off. I mean, I might stand to be corrected, but I think she's a long way off the top women. Her story, I think, will come to an end on Monday. But still, we shouldn't take away how much magic she's been able to bring to the first week. And you know, there is the tendency, and actually, you know, in a little bit of discussion with Naomi Cavaday about it yesterday, Barry, and Naomi, who experienced similar problems when she was young and actually is an advisor for mental health. And she said, what's the rush? You know, look at Bianca Andreescu, you know, the crazy situation with Andreescu. She wins Indian Wells and she's a little injured after Indian Wells. She plays Miami and she pulls out and we, you know, not to be seen since. And for Coco, it doesn't have to happen now. If everyone takes the long-term view, she'll be great in, you know, 3 years, 4 years, or you know, even 5 years. But it's better to have Coco Gauff playing tennis at 28, 29, 30, than just all of a sudden burning her out now, going from one tournament to the other, getting huge guarantees. And then at 22 years of age, I'm not to say that it's going to happen to Coco Gauff, but there are a lot of situations, aren't there, Barry, in the last 20 or 30 years where that has happened. And then that was the reason they brought it in.
Yes, I mean, particularly with Jennifer Capriati, who turned pro when she was still 13, just before her 14th birthday. She actually got to the final of her very first pro event, which was remarkable. But then the problems that she had a few years on, the burnout, certain issues that she had away from tennis that obviously took her out of the sport for a while. Thankfully, she sorted it out and came back and became a major champion, which was magnificent to see. But you'd like to see someone like Gauff, like anybody, you'd like to see them avoid those pitfalls, being managed properly and not doing too much too soon. Of course, the world is a greedy place, isn't it? You get a stunning arrival on centre court like she had on Friday after her fine wins over Venus Williams and Rybakova on court one earlier in the week. And everybody just wants it to continue. They want this amazing moment to happen again and again and again. But it doesn't happen like that, does it? You know, I know, we all know really that, you know, it's sort of comes in waves and sometimes those waves can crash and it can be difficult at times. And she will have more difficult moments in her career, undoubtedly, because that's life.
Yeah.
But if she seems to be, you know, been brought up really well, she's got a lovely sort of open attitude, but, you know, polite, but listens well. That's something that stood out from an interview I heard with Patrick Mouratoglou, who said that's one of the things that actually stood out to him when he first met her. And he was asking her what she wanted out of the game. And he was talking about what he felt he could do to help her with his team. And you think, well, that's good, because some kids can come on the block and think they know it all.
Yeah,
and then they fall away from the game, and there are plenty of examples of players like that. But as we stand, I think, you know, the future is incredibly bright for her, and she's on the right trajectory.
Yeah, and there are many instances where players emerge into greatness, and the people around them just tell them how great they are. And if you constantly got people telling you how great you are, and don't actually pull you up when you do one or two things that maybe, because you're young, the mistakes you make, then all of a sudden you just, again, you sort of live in this bubble that's totally detached from the real world. And I saw, you know, a lovely tweet actually from Selina Hinchcliffe, who did the post-match interviews at qualifying. Mm-hmm. And when Selina interviewed Coco, she actually shook her hand after the interview. And she said to her cameraman, well, that's a first.
Yeah, I mean, just polite manners, really, and she thanked her, didn't she? Yeah. So that's great to hear that kind of thing already in place, and obviously it is a story though that's just going to run and run beyond Wimbledon and then some. But let's look at perhaps other stories. Obviously, the match that everybody was waiting to happen and did materialise was the second round clash between Nick Kyrgios and Rafa Nadal. All the trash talk before on both sides kind of thing that got very sort of animated and heated and somewhat unpleasant. But it did add an extra edge, a huge edge to that match, didn't it? And the great thing I felt, although in the initial stages, Kyrgios clearly looked somewhat nervous, and you thought, well, is he going to put his racket where his mouth is, as it were? But he eventually did manage to do that and produce some great tennis, which actually grew even greater tennis out of Nadal.
It was magic. And as you said, yeah, he was a little very slow out the blocks, to be honest, where Rafa wasn't. I expected Rafa to start strongly. I actually thought Kyrgios would throw everything at Rafa early on, and then as the match wore on, then actually he would start to tire. But that was certainly not the case. Kyrgios got better and better. I thought his levels of intensity were very good. In terms of the match where it was really won and lost, you'd have to say, at the beginning of the four-set tiebreak, when Kyrgios made that error he should have smashed it and he didn't. He tried to be too cute with the volley. But in terms of the energy that it brought, I absolutely loved it. I had no problem when Kyrgios looked to hit the ball straight at Rafa. Too many players, understandably so, have played the big guys and haven't wanted to rattle the cage. But if you do rattle the cage, you've got to be able to have some substance behind it.
And he's definitely got that, hasn't he? Because you look at him, and not just against Rafa, but Roger and Novak, he's matched them in terms of head-to-head prior to this one. I think it was 6 wins for him, 6 for the rest of them, you know, and these are 3 all-time greats. So he definitely has that, and you just want to see him use that as much as he can. We're not always going to see it from him, though, are we? And it was very revealing, again, some of the comments afterwards from both. I thought at least it was nice to see a respectful finish. He actually patted Rafa on the back, having shook his hand, and they walked off together, which I think is just so great to see. You know, you've thrown everything at each other, not just the brickbats, but also some great tennis. And then to actually say, right, okay, game over, let's go off together. And I think that is, you know, that's something we can applaud and enjoy. But then to see Nick in his press conference and just he was respectfully talking about, you know, what Rafa brings. He says that intensity. He said, I just can't do that myself. I can't bring it point after point. And, you know, we are very different. They are. I mean, they're poles apart in character as well as game. But what games they have. But wasn't Rafa's serving superb in that match? And he carried it on yesterday. I was doing the match he played against Songa, and he was awesome with his serve. He didn't face a break point in the whole thing.
Yeah, which is what I felt during that match. When we're commentating, you get so wrapped up in the emotion that sometimes actually you know, I'm sure you feel the same. You maybe say something that in hindsight, a day or two later, maybe I slightly got that wrong. But I remember saying, this is the best I've ever seen Nadal serve. And I stick by that. And you know, confirmation yesterday with how well he served against Songa. And Kyrgios said after the match, didn't he, in his press conference, he said, you know, along with Federer, he's got the best 1-2 punch in the game. So best serve followed by that first shot, which is the forehand. I mean, it was just ultra aggressive. And, you know, gone are the days now where it always used to be the case at Wimbledon. We used to say, well, Rafa's more vulnerable than the other top guys, because he kind of needs favorable draws. And then once he gets through the first week, then all of a sudden he becomes one of the favorites. But you look at the draw this year. I mean, I think, you know, 8 years ago, Rafa would have lost. So that's the improvement that he has made as a tennis player that's made him actually even better on clay, in my opinion. You know, he's become even more aggressive on clay. The added extra layers to his tennis. We mentioned the serve. Obviously the forehand, the net game. I mean, he's so strong at the net as well. And the movement.
And the aggression in his ground strokes. I mean, he was playing Songa, as I say, in his last match. And yet he was outgunning a guy who is known for his, you know, huge forehand and weapons. But it's a bit sad to see Songa right at now. I don't, you know, he's not at the level he was. He's obviously had some serious injury issues, which have affected him for a while. He's trying to carry on, but I do wonder how much longer he might want to do that. But in terms of the guys still, you know, in contention, obviously Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, they've all dropped a set in the first week, but they've all put themselves in, you know, a strong position for week number two. Do you think with the hot weather, the slower speed perhaps of the grass this year, that really is playing into your tip, you know, Rafa for the title?
On what I've seen in the opening week, I haven't seen anything that will change my mind. I mean, coming in, the top three were way ahead of the rest. And obviously it became even clearer that because you had the early losses of Tsitsipas and Zverev, and Kevin Anderson went, and, you know, John Isner, although he hasn't played any tennis, that he's always the wild card. So the top three, I don't see anyone else outside Djokovic and Nadal and Federer. And you can make a case for all three, I think. I do feel that Federer's had the best draw out of Roger, Rafa and Novak. I was very impressed with Hubert Hurkacz, especially in that second set against Djokovic that he took. I mean, now we're getting to the business end, aren't we? So you're kind of starting to look at the draw. The bottom half is stronger. In the top half, the players who could potentially beat Djokovic. No surprise that Bautista Agut has cruised through the first week. He played great in Halle. So I'm kind of looking. I think RBA will get to the semis. Goffin to play Djokovic in the quarters, if all goes to plan. I think that could be a tough match, actually. I think Goffin's got a great game to be able to play Djokovic on grass. And then in the bottom half, I'm looking, and I'm sure you're the same, Barry, looking forward to on Monday for Berrettini-Federer.
Yeah, and Berrettini's already said, hasn't he? You know, I feel I've got the weapons to hurt Roger. So we shall see. I mean, he's a tall guy. He's risen up to the top 20. He's good, not just on the clay, but clearly on the grass, because he has an aggressive game and he's not afraid to come forward.
Yeah. Hey.
But hey, it's Roger Federer. Yeah. You know, it is Roger Federer. Let's not get too carried away just yet. But that will be a first meeting. In fact, of the 8 matches in the round of 16, 4 of them are going to be first encounters. And that, I think, is one that sort of does stand out. Above them, the next in the bracket, I mean, it would be one of those two to face either Mikhail Kukushkin, who's done brilliantly to come through unseeded, or the only other member of the top 10 who's still involved outside of the top 3, and that's Kei Nishikori, who, Baz, has won through a first week of a slam without dropping a set. What's going on?
Alleluia, he's got energy in. Energy left. Yeah, he played very well last year, Nishikori. And if my memory serves me right, he actually was a set all with Djokovic. And I think he had love 40 early stages of the third on Djokovic's serve. And Djokovic then upped his level. And it was that moment on that I thought Djokovic was going to win Wimbledon. But if it is Federer at Nishikori, I don't see Federer losing to Nishikori on a grass court, because the lack of pace that Nishikori has on the serve, and Federer will be able to use the slice. It's that sort of next section up, and it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts, because I commentated on the Dan Evans Joao Sousa.
I mean that matchup against Nadal, you finished off, didn't you, the week with that call of what was a thrilling 5-set match on court one. Just tell us a bit more about what that was like.
Well, I thought it was the best match of the whole week. You know, that there were arguably bigger stories, I think that's fair to say. But in terms of drama, in terms of the energy of the crowd, in terms of, for me, the merits of best of five, you know, I'm still hearing people, the will to want best of three. And actually interviewed Steve Simon on the Wimbledon radio channel yesterday, the WTA CEO, and he was putting the case, men best of three. No, thank you.
No.
It is that magic energy that you get in best of five sets. So of course, there are going to be occasions where the top guys, they win the first couple of sets and the third set's a washout. But 5-set tennis at its best. And Evans broke Sousa's serve in all 5 sets in either the first or second service game. So he led in all 5 sets. But Sousa, I mean, he is just his resilience and his fight. And I must confess, I never thought he could play tennis like that on a grass court. I mean, he was like a man possessed at times. He was covering the net incredibly well. And we talked about it before we started this interview, that backhand pass that he hit in the penultimate point.
Oh, how did he get to that? I mean, after the rally they'd had, after the sets they'd had, the hours on court, the miles they'd run, and he produced just one of the best shots of the tournament. That really stood up there for me. I think another shot I'd pick out was our friend Pablo Cuevas. That reverse forehand cross-court pass, if I can describe it like that, running back. I mean, he's the master of that shot. Any others that particularly stood out for you?
Yeah, I mean, just continuing the Evans-Sousa match, obviously the fifth set was, that the start was halted by, because they need to put the roof on.
Yes.
So that was sort of, I think it was a 14 and a half minute delay. And actually, I think that added to the drama in some sort of way. And actually, if you think about it, you know, again, going back to best of five sets, and often, you know, people say, well, the problem with best of five sets is the crowd can't stay with it. But a 15 minute delay gives the crowd a chance to maybe grab a drink, maybe go to to the bathroom and then come back and fully invest in the fifth set. So again, I think that was, you know, added weight to, you know, the roof being on court one. I think some of the other stories, what, men's and women's or both?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I think the Murray...
Well, any shots particularly? I mean, you know, particular moment, because I was talking about the Cuevas one, but...
The Kyrgios when he went straight at Rafa.
Yeah.
That was pretty special. The underarm serve, we knew that was going to happen. It was just a question of when.
And the 143-mile-an-hour second serve.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's great for tennis. I will argue that to absolutely anyone, whether you love him or whether you loathe him, he's great for tennis, and he will get the casual tennis fans to watch his matches. So yeah, I think that was off the top of my head that those are sort of big shots that I can remember. Any others?
Well, I think that there's a good number there. We could go on and on picking them out, couldn't we? But perhaps we should turn to the second week and obviously to Monday, to what is one of the days of the year in tennis, because you have all the 16 players remaining in both men's and women's singles in action on the court. So looking down, I mean, let's just quickly run through that the centre court order of play is Sosa first up against Nadal. Then it's Joe Konta, who fought back again to beat Sloane Stephens for the fourth time this year. She's up against Petra Kvitova, and perhaps whilst we've already talked about Sosa and Nadal, but Konta Kvitova, what a match that could be. And great to see Petra coming through when she nearly didn't join in because of the recent injury.
Kvitova's always at her most dangerous when no one talks about her. Mm-hmm. And no one has mentioned Kvitova. Maybe it was an absolute masterstroke from her that she, it was only a late call, wasn't it, whether she was going to play, because she injured herself going back to Rome. So she didn't play the French. She didn't play any warm-up events. That probably would be the match of the day, I think, if I look at the last 16, because of the way the top half is, and especially that second quarter, whoever wins that will get, in my opinion, will get through to the semifinals. It's going to be a hard-hitting affair. Konta did terrifically well to come back and beat Sloane Stephens. But you would have, because of her previous history, you would have to, for me, I would go with Kvitova.
The Berrettini-Federer match will then be the other side of the sandwich, as it were, on centre court. And we've referred to that somewhat. I mean, do you see the Italian being able to cause an upset there of huge proportions in a first meeting with Federer?
If Federer played Berrettini on Monday and it was a Monday afternoon in Halle, I think Berrettini would have a great chance. But we're talking about Berrettini on centre court against Federer in the last 16 in Wimbledon. I just think it's too early for him.
Okay.
And a slow start on centre court with a few nerves. He did well yesterday to recover. He saved, was it a couple match points? He certainly saved one. I think it might have been two match points, Berrettini, to get through to play Federer. So I think with it being early on in his career right at the top level, Berrettini, I think Federer will have too much.
Serena Williams will start proceedings on number one court against Carlos Suarez Navarro. In terms of the matchup, I would have to say Serena for that. But what a great story, a lovely conclusion on Saturday on centre, the fact that she and Andy Murray finally did get to play that mixed doubles. And it was just a joyous occasion, lots of smiles, but clearly, you know, lots of determination as well that they're going to make the most of this duo.
I heard, because I was commentating on Sosa and Evans, but I heard driving home on Russell Fuller, who's the tennis correspondent for the BBC, that Serena played the first two points with her accreditation.
She did. I saw it. I was in the commentary box watching it. And she did exactly unbelievable. That.
So she warmed
she
up.
She went through
five
the whole
minutes.
Warm up. Yeah.
No one noticed.
Did. No. And then she suddenly rushed to the chair, and Andy went after. I think he was a bit worried what was going on, and then there were a few laughs, and yeah, it emerged that was the case. So, but they came on and played so well together. I mean, to team up Andy on the ad side, Serena, I think, will only do the forehand side. But it was nice afterwards, that interview, they were asked, you know, who's the team leader or who's the leader? And she said, we're a team,
diplomatically.
And then Andy said, well, actually, he said, we're both because we're younger siblings. He said, it's nice for us for a change to sort of take charge, but we're taking it in turn. So it's all very diplomatic. But, I mean, how do you face an Andy Murray and a Serena Williams? How do you prepare for that, whoever you are on the other side? I thought the others did very well to come out and take the right approach. They clearly were thrilled to be getting on the centre court, but it must have been quite intimidating. And I just, one other thought on that, to show what it means, you know, for fans, because I was then a little later on walking around out towards the hill. And there were people coming down the steps by the water garden there from the resale ticket office who had just got a centre court ticket at that late stage. And they couldn't believe their luck. And people were sort of, you know, jogging through, even running through to get to the centre court as quickly as they could because of this lovely opportunity late in the evening to get to see those two.
Yeah, it's put doubles in the mix back in the spotlight, hasn't it? Which has always been, for me, a disappointment in a lot of the tournaments. And again, it's actually my wish. And, you know, I've been consistent on this, Barry, but I would actually like to see them use a percentage of your doubles points for your singles ranking. I do think that there should be a commitment from the top singles players to play a certain amount of doubles tournaments in the year. I'm not saying it should be majors because I think that's a stretch too far. But I think some of the other tournaments, you know, maybe four doubles events a year or five doubles events a year and use a percentage of that to singles points because it will also make them better tennis players.
Yes.
And better tennis players means an all-round game, which means you have more contrast of styles, more be able to adapt to certain situations, be more comfortable coming forward.
That sounds a great idea, Baz. But coming back to the round of 16 and what we've got on number one court after the Williams-Suarez-Navarro clash, it is then Simona Halep taking on Coco Gauff. Obviously, it's another step up for Gauff in terms of whom she's facing. Halep, seventh seed. She's come down a bit in the rankings since she was world number one, obviously. But she's still such a force in the way she dismissed Azarenka in the previous round. Do you think that is going to be finally the brick wall that Gauff hits in this amazing run that she's had?
I do, yes. I hope that it isn't a whitewash. My fear is it might be, because I think for Halep, no one wants to lose to a 15-year-old, right? I mean, you know, you don't want to be that one who loses to a 15-year-old. And with Coco being the story as she was for the first week. But Halep is a Grand Slam champion. She's been able to play under most extreme pressure. So trying to win your first major at the French Open is totally different stratosphere, to, in my opinion, to playing Coco Gauff on court one in the last 16 and win one. So I think she'll handle the situation. And I think she'll just make too many balls.
I think she'll that's fight. The key, isn't it?
Yeah. Coco will fight. But I think Simona, with Coco just being very inexperienced, I think we'll have too much game for her.
Well, what if the world number one in the men's draw, top seed Novak Djokovic, who takes on the young Frenchman, Hugo Humbert, who's come through unseeded to the round of 16 and played an absolute blinder in beating Felix Auger-Aliassime. What more can you tell us about him?
Another young Frenchman on the conveyor belt. They just seem to churn them out, don't they? Corentin Moutet, who another young Frenchman, he qualified and has had a very good run in recent weeks. So he actually played Murray, didn't he, the day before in the doubles. And I'm just wondering whether that might have helped play on a big court, sort of be, you know, to adapt to the situation. So, yeah, talented left-hander, can swing from the hip. He's not going to worry Djokovic. You know, players who swing from the hip, it's not gonna, might worry Novak for 5 or 10 minutes. But I think a great effort to get through to the last 16 and a bright future. Yeah, I think on the face of it, slightly disappointing for Auger-Aliassime, but we must put it into context. He's had a massive breakthrough year, but going to Wimbledon, never won a main draw match in a major. So, you know, he's still very inexperienced. I think he might have been one of the big favourites as well, even after the first 3 or 4 days, which is ridiculous.
Well, Djokovic, the men's number one. Mm-hmm. We've got all this way through the podcast and we haven't yet talked about the women's world number one, Ash Barty. But how would you sum up her first week?
She oozes class. And the slice back end is a thing of beauty. And no female player is going to relish playing Barty in the form she's in. And, you know, my question marks about her coming in was maybe just Wimbledon came a little too soon after what she achieved at the French Open, but she looks comfortable, doesn't she? You know, almost finally, well, it's still early days, but generally the woman's number one hasn't necessarily been comfortable with that tag. Barty Serena is what we all want.
But will we get it? Alison Risk is the American who loves the grass, who's going to be Barty's challenge on Monday. That will be the first match on the number two court.
She could do. To beat Bencic, that surprised me. So she's playing well, Risk. She also had that incredible match, didn't she, earlier in the week against Vekic, which I think was the first match under the roof on court one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Alison's done it the hard way. I would go for Barty. It wouldn't surprise me if she dropped a set, but I do expect Serena to play Barty. It'll be Tuesday afternoon.
And with a little look back to what we were predicting beforehand, the less said about Angelique Kerber by both of us, I think probably the better. But we reassessed, didn't we? And I think when we were working on the Wimbledon channel, both went for Pliskova, who has got through. She had one or two struggles, but has got through and takes on fellow Czech Muchova in the second match on number two court. Perhaps just finishing off our podcast with your thoughts on Pliskova and where she now stands. Do you still stand by that view that she can go through and win the whole thing?
Is it allowed that we're able to change our
pick? Are we going to change again?
I mean it is official. It has gone on record. If anyone's listened to the Wimbledon Radio Channel this week, we both did change it.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm glad we did.
I'm too tired of changing predictions. I'm going to leave it there.
Going to leave it. Pliskova, I thought the way Karolina came through against Shea Suwei, which is not tennis against Shea Suwei, it's one of the toughest matches you're going to play on grass. I mean, what a quirky player she is. She's brilliant to watch. You know, very sort of similar to Fabrice Santoro, the magician that used to be. She comes up with all different weird and wonderful shots. And it was actually commentating with, I think it was with Rupert Bell, Barry, and on the Wimbledon Radio Channel. And he sort of described it as sort of table tennis shots at times. You know, you think of someone hitting a serve in table tennis, the way they chop down on it. That's how she plays. So I think for Pliskova to come through, huge sigh of relief, and she was flat in the second set. Almost the feet weren't moving, and generally when the legs aren't working is when you're just tight and you freeze under pressure. But she regrouped in the third. So in my opinion, she's the best player in the bottom half.
I would agree.
But that doesn't necessarily mean Pliskova's going to get to the Wimbledon final, because her tennis has been there for a number of years now. But what she hasn't been able to do is, I would say, really play her very best level when the pressure's on. I think we'll learn a lot about her Monday, Tuesday and Thursday. I think if she gets to the final, I think she'll win it. But there's no guarantee she'll be able to pass those tests on the way.
No, but I think what's so important for her now is having Conchita Martinez, the 1994 champion, alongside her, working with her. And that is the sort of the extra piece of the jigsaw, I feel, to make her a Grand Slam champion. Whether it will be in a week's time, whether it will be subsequently, we'll find out. But thanks, Bazza. I think it's time I went off to cut my grass. But I'll see you tomorrow and see everybody again on the podcast after Wimbledon is done. Thanks for joining us.